Hello and welcome to the Third Sector Podcast. I'm Lucinda Rouse.
And I'm Andy Ricketts. Each week we bring you half an hour of discussion and debate about the important goings-on in the charity world. And this week we'll be talking about recent trends in individual giving and how charities might respond. Later in Charity Changed My Life, we'll be hearing a story from Martin House Children's Hospice.
Now, if you were expecting to hear about funding for small charities in this episode, as I promised you would last week, then I'm afraid there has been a small change of plan and that will now be coming up later this month. But this week's topic is by no means unrelated, and that is the state of individual charitable giving. A record amount of money was donated to charities in 2023, but the number of people giving fell. Charities are now relying on a dwindling group of regular givers. That's according to the UK Giving Report by the Charities Aid Foundation, which was published last week and surveyed 13,000 people. So in 2023, £13.9 billion was donated to charities by members of the public, which, if my maths is correct, represents a 9% increase on 2022 giving and almost a third on the 2021 figures. The mean monthly donation was £65, up from £60 in 2022. But what is concerning is that the median donation has remained at £20 for the past 7 years. So a £20 monthly donation is the median amount. And another interesting finding was that people living in the less affluent areas of the United Kingdom are the most generous as a proportion of their average income. So those are just the high-level findings. And Andy, I know that you have been speaking to a number of charities for their reaction to this report.
Yeah, that's right. I've been working on a long read for the website that will be published later today as we come out. And I've been speaking to a few of the larger fundraising charities to find out what their experience is of individual giving. And as you might expect, maybe it's been quite a mixed picture in terms of what charities have been reporting. So Crisis, for example, the homelessness charity, which is a really big fundraising operation, they said that fewer people have been able to donate because of the cost of living crisis. And those that can are donating smaller amounts, which sounds really worrying when they're kind of seeing smaller donations from fewer people. Mm. Cancer Research said that they're having to spend more to attract the same level of donations. That's all tied in with inflation and how the costs for charities are going up. And they're finding that actually attracting the same level of donations that they were before is now more expensive. But they did say that those that do give are giving more. So they're seeing a slightly more positive picture than Crisis. Mm. The RSPCA animal charity obviously said that fundraising had remained stable, but then some of that they attributed to new partnerships rather than particularly individual giving. The charity that really seemed to be bucking the trend is Islamic Relief UK, which says that it had seen a 35% increase in overall restricted income in 2023 compared with the previous year, and also the number of regular donors that it had gone up.
Wow.
And they said that they've put a lot of work over the last 5 years into getting their supporters to give unrestricted donations. Listeners will probably know that obviously if you give a donation for a specific appeal, say a disaster happens in a certain part of the world, an appeal is launched, that money can essentially only be spent on that particular area if someone gives to that particular appeal. Unrestricted funding is obviously far more useful for charities really across the board because they can spend it on whatever they want. It's just given to them by a supporter and they can just say, we're going to spend it on office staff or we're going to spend it on this particular project or whatever. And Islamic Relief has obviously recognised this and has spent a lot of time and effort over the last 5 years trying to engage with its donors and say, okay, can you give us unrestricted funding? Because that's really helpful for us. The charity said it has totally revamped its approach to generating unrestricted donations through improved data-led direct marketing, building better relationships with supporters and taking a digital first approach, which the charity says has helped it improve unrestricted income and supporter retention rates year on year.
Mm, that is really interesting, particularly when we had the news also this week, I believe, of Tier Fund announcing that they were going to be getting rid, very sadly, of their policy team exactly for this reason, because although they had record fundraising numbers last year, that was all linked to specific appeals, or for the most part was linked to specific appeals, and they just haven't received enough unrestricted funding to be able to keep one of these, I would say, very important teams within the organisation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a fairly typical picture across a lot of charities. Unrestricted income is becoming harder to come by.
Well, I would just like to bring into the conversation at this point our guest for this week. So we're delighted to be joined by Philippa Cornish from the Charities Aid Foundation, the organisation which put together the UK Giving Report, to discuss these top level findings in a little bit more detail and hopefully help answer how do charities best respond to these findings. Philippa is the head of clients at CAF. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Lucinda. Good to be here.
So what, in CAF's opinion, is driving the overall increase in donations in terms of value?
I think, as you said in your introduction, what we have seen is that we are increasingly reliant on a smaller population of donors giving more. And from talking to some of the donors that we work with, we know that individuals who are very plugged into their local environment, who have a keen eye on what's going on, have potentially added to their regular giving, where they maybe support some of the larger charities, and supplemented that with some donations to more local causes. So we saw a lot of money going to food banks, which is obviously not surprising, but not very good to see in such a challenging environment, and also warmth banks as well. So I think for individuals where giving is just essential to them, they have almost picked up some slack where maybe people have stopped giving and have increased and added to the causes they support.
Your chief executive, Neil Hislop, has called for more widespread and sustainable culture of giving. How can this be cultivated?
I think there's lots that can be done, and it's really a collaboration. The report includes some recommendations for three key audiences. So CAF works quite closely with the government to try and work with them to shape a bit of a national strategy for philanthropy and giving. So that's incentivizing matching, that's working in localized areas on projects that are a bit more specific and targeted, and working with other sector players to kind of amplify that message. We also have some advice for the donors that we work with. So you had a good conversation there about the importance of unrestricted giving, which is obviously something that CAF absolutely advocates for with all the donors that we work with, be they individuals or, where they can, businesses as well. And so asking donors to consider funding those essential core costs is so important. We have one client that we worked with that recently funded the payroll for a charity that they supported for a couple of months and made that as an unrestricted donation because they knew that's where the need was. I also think asking donors to reflect on their donations, and a lot of people give regularly and that they sign up, and that happens for a long time, and obviously external factors change, maybe their own financial position, but also inflation has an impact. And so where people can, asking them to reflect and review their regular giving and maybe increase it where that's possible. Lucinda mentioned the median donation of £20, and that hasn't changed since 2017, and it really feels that with the change in inflation that we've had, that would need to be more like £25 plus to give the charities the same spending power. So where people potentially give through their pay or have a direct debit and they can, just asking them to think about, I give through pay here at CAF, and it's something that I need a nudge to do, to remember that I need to increase that amount. And so thinking about that and getting that message out, I think, is quite important.
And do you have any recommendations for the charities that you work with, and also just more generally people who might be listening to this, in terms of how they can get that messaging right and how they can get it out there that there is a need to reverse this stagnant state of the fact that people's donations are just not going as far as they were a few years ago and there needs to be an uplift?
Yes, I think there's a few different avenues, and obviously understanding that there's a huge range of charities across the UK that have very different strategies and also different audiences. There's some things in the report that could be helpful. So this year, for the first time, we've been doing the report for 20 years, but this year, for the first time, we mapped it geographically. So using new constituency boundaries. So there's some intel in there about generosity hotspots, which, as you mentioned, some are maybe a bit surprising, and mapping these against areas of need and trying to do some of that connecting a little bit more carefully. I think there's also something about the younger generation of donors. So what we have seen in that population that are increasing their donation is that they tend to be a little older. And so I think there's something about making charitable giving appealing and worth engaging with for a younger generation is really important. It's definitely something we at CAF talk about quite a lot, is how can we, with the products that we offer, engage the next generation? Because obviously that's who we need to take us through the next 20, 30 years. There was something as well in the research that volunteer numbers have also dropped. So I think there were 7.1 million people volunteered, which is like an army of people. That's incredible. But obviously that number was heavily impacted by the pandemic and by being locked down. And I think some rejuvenating of volunteer options and opportunities would help people connect to local causes. And then obviously that leads to maybe supporting them more financially as well. When you volunteer and you build that connection, it builds that trust. Trust in charities, I think, is at around 55%. And so we saw that when there's that increased trust geographically, there was an increase in donations. And so sort of closing the loop on that, I think, would be really helpful. These are easy things to say. I know they're not easy things to do.
You mentioned there the breakdown of areas in terms of which places give more than others. And the report for the first time breaks down the UK into the 650 electoral constituencies and comes up with the most and least generous, which is throws up some quite surprising numbers. We have Belfast West, I think, which is one of the most deprived parts of Northern Ireland, gives an average of 2.2% of household income to good causes. In contrast, Kensington and Bayswater, which is one of the wealthiest parts of the UK, people tend to donate just 0.5% of their household incomes. What does this data tell charities about how they might go around targeting particular areas of the country, do you think?
Well, I think it is a good challenge to maybe some assumptions we might all make about generosity. So I think using that to help map where areas might be relevant for a charity in terms of targeting new donors would be very useful. I think also thinking about the importance of local connection. So getting under the difference between those numbers probably warrants further inspection. But thinking anecdotally, I suppose where areas where people live for a long time are very connected to their community, perhaps go to church or to mosque or to have a religious connection to the area, where there's infrastructure that connects charities and community and those that want to give and volunteer with local government, those all see a much higher inclination to give. And I guess it's more challenging in the bigger cities. So you mentioned Kensington and Bayswater, where I think it was 0.5% of income is donated on average. I mean, anecdotally speaking, cities tend to have more transient populations. And so building that local connection can maybe be a little bit more difficult. So it's encouraging that, to foster that local connection to an area, lean into the place-based giving, as it's called.
And CAF has provided the data. And yeah, it's highly complex, isn't it, trying to work out what's behind these trends? And we wouldn't want to generalize at all. So thinking specifically about younger generations, noting that the pool is shrinking and getting older, and also looking at dwindling volunteer numbers, obviously getting younger people more bought into the idea of charitable giving and contributing to charitable work in other ways is the way forward. Charities really need to be working hard in this area. What is your advice with the work that you've been doing with charities in terms of how they can become more appealing to younger people in this country?
What a good question. I think if I had the real answer to that, it would really help us all. There's so much research out there about the generational differences. And I think when we think of a generation that has been impacted by the pandemic and in lockdown in the way that they have for quite formative years, it's quite difficult to think about how we maybe reconnect them from a world online to a world offline and thinking about the community around them. At CAF, we have some services for charities, which include the more advice-led. So we have a consultancy service that works with charities about diversifying their income and different fundraising strategies that might work on more getting into those more targeted audiences. But also we have a fundraising service as well that charities can use to collect online donations. And I think making that as easy and as straightforward as possible is obviously really important. So thinking about how funds are collected, being contactless, removing away from the reliance on cash, and thinking about how that maps across the generations is probably a good way to start.
I guess building on that, there's a sort of a broader question about how charities can bring new donors of all generations into the shrinking donor pool, particularly to provide unrestricted funding.
Yes, I think one thing that was interesting in the report was people's responses to talking about the way that they give. I think sometimes we can have like a very British attitude to some of these things. It's obviously considered quite personal. And when you think about motivations for giving, often those are very personal. They're, you know, people give to causes that have affected their friends or family or that their friends or family care about as like the main motivations for giving. But there were some interesting pieces about how people feel about talking about donations. And there was much more support and admiration for people that talked about their giving and where they gave to and why and made that connection very visible than those that didn't. So I think there's probably something we can do about promoting a bit more of a conversation about giving, having people talk about where they give to and why they support that cause. Because if a motivation for giving is that it's something that's supported by friends and family, that implies the trust, then that's a really good way to spread the message about the work the charity is doing and try and engage new supporters.
You mentioned trust there, and trust in charities is one of the things that the report looks into, in particular in individual electoral constituencies as well. What can charities take from that about how they might go about building better trust with individuals? Because generally, trust in charities doesn't change much. It might kind of go up and down a little bit over the years, but it has remained fairly consistent over the years.
Yes, I think it was a low of 48% and now it's at 55%. So yeah, the range is not significant. I think that's probably where the challenge is slightly different if you're a large charity versus a small charity, and your idea of trust and what that means is kind of different. When you're a large charity, you have the brand awareness and you're well known, and they're often seen as these large organisations with a lot of power and potential. And then when you're a small organisation, you have that local connection. You might know somebody that works there. You might actually see the evidence of the service around you that the charity is providing. And so those are two kind of different trust conversations to tackle that probably, and I'm simplifying that, there's just a big charity and a small charity. Obviously, there's a huge range within that. But the aspect of trust is slightly nuanced, I think, probably depending on who your supporter base is. So when there is a story in the headlines that causes trust to dip, that tends to, I think, impact the larger charities a little more. And so I think talking frankly about the need for core cost support and unrestricted funding, no matter what the size of the charity, is really important to just help the wider population understand like why a charity is so different from an organization and why we can't expect charities to provide and sustain a society that has had so many challenges thrown at it without adequate funding. I think the TED Talk by Dan Pilotta is so interesting on that for the uninitiated potentially to check out, and about being upfront about that actually builds and engenders trust.
So interesting. And like, we're talking about such massive issues. And I did think in this CAF report, the finding about the super donors was quite interesting. And they seem to be really pulling their weight in this difficult fundraising environment and leading to this uplift year on year. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on how charities can best incentivize these big donors, these super donors, to carry on giving or even more to come their way.
So I think the super giver we defined as somebody that had donated, sponsored, fundraised, and volunteered. So had kind of ticked all the boxes of support for a charity and really had showed up for a cause that was important to them. And so I think actually highlighting the range of ways that you can support a charity is really, really important. We are obviously in a cost of living crisis, and there is endless research that shows how that's impacting household budgets and how people are reconsidering how they manage their outgoings. And so obviously for some people it's a very real stark reality that they can't continue to do everything they used to, but there's also a way to donate goods and services, there's a way to volunteer, you can maybe give your time rather than just funding. And I think that building those bridges and those connections with individuals when it's not just about giving is also really important and will help grow that population that sees the different ways that they can support, and hopefully grow that 1 million population of super givers that we have in the country that are really incredible. I also, it's like a very simple thing to say, but the act of just saying thank you and acknowledging the donors that you have, and being able to maybe see those super givers within the data that you have and be able to acknowledge them is really valuable. Everybody likes to be thanked. And so finding a way to potentially manage them and care for them slightly differently would also encourage them then to do the talking about it and grow the population as well.
And obviously charities broadly want to grow their supporter base as best they can. But obviously, if we are seeing fewer people give more, does that suggest that there might actually be another kind of field that could be harvested quite fruitfully from those people who are prepared to support more and who are prepared to give more? And how might charities take advantage of that?
Yes, there's 69% of people, I think, said that they were not considering reviewing, cancelling or amending the donations that they already did. So there's quite a significant population of people that are quite steadfast in their support. And so I think with the ask phrased rightly about understanding different circumstances but where people can, I think definitely asking for increases is fair. We work with a lot of high net worth clients and a lot of corporate clients as well. And so the message that we like to share with them is where you can do. So where you can give more, do that. It's like the simplest conversation to have. And so I definitely think there's value in doing that. And it's the inflation point. Some people maybe haven't even thought, oh, that £20 that I gave 10 years ago, I could maybe afford to up that or recognise that it needs upping just because it's worth less. And so just having that reflection and maybe making that easy to action is a really great thing to do. There was something interesting in this banknote denomination obsession that we have. So even though cash giving is really on the decline and a lot more is obviously digital, we as a population are quite stuck on like a £5, £10, £20 amount. And so you don't have to think, oh, I give 20, I can only give it, you can only up it to 25 or 30. You can up it by £2. You know, there's just any kind of increase, I think, is valuable when you then are able to roll that out at any kind of scale.
So much food for thought there. Philippa Cornish from CAF, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now we move on to Charity Changed My Life, in which we bring you the stories of people whose lives have been transformed for the better thanks to the work of charities. This week we'll hear from a family who has benefited from the services of Martin House Hospice in Boston Spa, just outside Leeds.
My name's Bethany, and I first got in touch with Martin House through Leeds Hospital. I have three children, and my youngest son was born in 2020. Thomas has got a rare genetic condition called ATRX syndrome. So he's nearly 4 years old now, but he cannot sit up on his own. He can't talk or communicate. He needs oxygen and a ventilator at night to help him breathe. And he can't eat food orally, so he's fed through a tube into his stomach. But having said that, he is a very, very lovely little boy and full of the joys of life. To put it really simply, we couldn't manage our life without the support of Martin House. They're like a lifeline to us. Obviously, when somebody first says we're going to refer you to a children's hospice, so you just automatically assume end of life care. But once you go there and you start to spend some time there, you realise that it's much, much more than end of life. For our family, it's just absolutely a place of support, a place of care. So Thomas gets some respite stays so we can take him to Martin House, and either we can stay with him as a family or we can just leave him there safe in the knowledge that he's getting the expert care that he needs. I have two other children and they love going to Martin House because they are also superbly looked after, and you know, all the staff make a big fuss of them, and there's playrooms and arts and crafts and music, and there's a really lovely outdoor space. So it's just really nice to go as a family. My husband says it's like going back to your parents' house. You go in the door and straight away it's like, put your feet up. Like, phew, it's just so relaxing and nice and lovely. It's like a second home. They offer this like whole package of support and well-being. They're just amazing service that they provide.
That was Bethany, whose family has received support from Martin House Children's Hospice. If you would like your organisation to be featured in Charity Change My Life, we'd love to hear from you. All it takes is a short voice message from someone who has benefited from your services. You can find details of how to get in touch in the show notes to this episode.
And that's it for this week. Next week, we'll be learning about organisational trauma affecting charity and humanitarian workers and how it can be addressed at both an individual and an organisational level. But for now, thank you to our guest, Philippa Cornish, and our producers, Inga Marsden and Nav Pal.